It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Welcome to Necoxa Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
All right, I like what you did there, because people are like, wait, what? I like it. You took the title of the original program. So is it familiar enough is my question. Like, do people have an inkling, any inkling, clue as to where you're headed? So I will let you explain that you are riffing off of Welcome to Wrexham. And we do have, are we triangulating right off the top?
Are we
triangulating Wrexham?
There's
a lot of triangulation in this one. Yeah. And I didn't have Eva Longoria on my business card, so take it away. Wait, I said business card? It's a bingo card. I don't have it on my business card either. I didn't have Eva Longoria on my business card either. But take it away.
Some big news in the world of international soccer news broken on Monday by Variety, our sister publication, and then some tack on news broken by you and I. Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds.
Grammatical.
We're doing this, really?
No, I'm sorry. This is also one of my... What? You know how whether you say it's I or me.
I know how
you
to
take
know
the other
if it's
stuff
I or
out.
Me. I know,
well, then
I
why'd
know.
You say I? You wouldn't say it's,
because
broken
I misspoke,
by I.
Scott. Because I misspoke.
Okay. Misspoke. Pretend I never interrupted. Go right
okay.
on.
Okay. Anyway, big news in international soccer. Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, actors and friends who have, I think a lot of our listeners will know, bought a Welsh soccer team a few years ago for no money and turned it into an international media sensation of sorts.
Juggernaut.
They have bought into Club Necaxa, and a team that competes in Liga MX, the top division of Mexican soccer. I imagine, and we'll get into all this, I imagine their ownership plan there is to contribute a lot of the expertise that they've had, the success they've had, both on the field and off it at Wrexham. And as part of the tie-up there, the backers of Necaxa, a group that includes a number of Americans and a number of celebrities, including Eva Longoria and Justin Verlander, Kate Upton, the group is led by Al Tylis, and Sam Porter, they took a 5% stake in Wrexham. So minority stakes sold in both directions across the ownership of this Mexican soccer team and this Welsh soccer team. And I imagine, Scott, we're going to be seeing a lot more of both on the field and off it, these two teams working together to boost each other's valuation, its fan bases, and its success.
You know why I like talking about Necaxa?
Why?
Because I like to say where they're located.
Aguas calientes.
Hope nobody gets in hot water, but aguas calientes. Yes, a very nice part of Mexico. Okay, let me use my Spanish a little bit. You and I believe, I think we're on the same page here, thinking that Liga MX is a bit of a sleeping giant, right? Do we agree here? In like soccer growing, World Cup coming, Hispanic audience in the U.S. I mean, it is the most watched soccer league in the U.S. Now, I don't think too many people, given the choices of, hey, what do you think is the most watched soccer league in the U.S.? Everybody would say, well, probably EPL, even, on U.S. TV. Maybe MLS, Messi. No, it's Liga MX.
I think two things. I can see a world where there's a lens you can view Mexican soccer as the most undervalued sports property in the Americas, probably. You're right. The TV viewership is huge, both in the U.S. and obviously in Mexico. There are some structural challenges that make understanding the economics quite difficult. For one, the league does not sell its commercial rights as a group.
Centrally. So yeah, they're trying, but they're working toward it. From what we understand, they're working toward it.
Maybe, but what do you have to offer Club America and Chivas to make that happen? In a world in which it was structured like the NFL, from a transparency standpoint, from a lack of promotion relegation standpoint, from a centralized rights perspective, yeah, I think these teams would be worth way more than they are. There's just so many questions about how do you get to that point? And looming over the whole thing as a bigger question also, what is its relationship with Major League Soccer look like? Is there a world, a lot of people believe there's a world in a decade emerging where there's one league?
Yeah.
And there's promotion and relegation up and down, or even a set amount of teams, whatever it looks like. That would increase the value of these clubs also, giving them more access into the much bigger sports marketing economy that we have north of the border as opposed to south of it. So, yeah, in some ways, I think you and this is the thesis that Sam and Al had when they bought into Necaxa was undervalued. These are the structural changes that we think are going to happen, and the audience is already there. It's just, I think, a big question. It's a big if of whether Mexican soccer gets to that point, either via merger, via an agreement to commercialize their rights as a single entity, or whether it continues to be a world where there are a few teams that make a ton of money, Chivas and Club America, and then a whole lot of teams that are stuck out on their own trying to do their own commercial deals and not making nearly as much.
All right. I'm doing value add here, doing homework while you're speaking. But I still can't tell you exactly where, you know, the others are located. But what do you think's going on there? You mentioned Club America and Chivas. These are well-known clubs from Liga MX. What are they thinking that now that Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney are like, wait a minute, like they're looking over to Aguascalientes going, whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on here? Why not us? We're the big boys here. They should be doing this with us. Like, we should be promoting our brands, because that's the approach it's been. Like, we're the big boys. Our brands are dominant in the U.S. I'd be looking, let me see, I don't know how many miles, but northwest of Mexico City right now, just south of Zacatecas, going, what's going on in the sports business world and what are they building over there? Because as you know, I'm a huge fan of what Ryan and Rob are able to do in terms of content and distribution on a global scale. Like, anything they touch turns to gold. So what do we think the future is here with these two putting their Midas touch on the soccer team that is not the dominant brand in Liga MX?
I think there's a few things we'll see. I cannot imagine a world where these teams are not playing preseason or exhibition games against each other, maybe both in Wales and in Mexico at some point relative, or maybe even in America, to be totally
players
honest.
On loan.
At some point soon. Players on loan, I think, is something else you might see as well. This is it's an overlapping ownership group. It's not a multi-team ownership group necessarily. But to me, the secret sauce, and I think you agree here, the thing that has made Rob and Ryan so successful at Wrexham is an understanding of comedy, media, social media, docuseries. Welcome to Wrexham was a masterstroke in getting so many people around the world who had no idea what this team was or why they should care about it to suddenly care and invest their time in it. Could we see, as I joked, a Welcome to Necaxa docuseries?
Yeah, Cynthia Littleton teased it. Like, there's a possibility, but I'm saying, can I make a prediction here?
Please.
Like, there's no way. There's no way that Rob and Ryan undertake this project, you know, whatever the stake is in the team, despite the love of Aguascalientes and the ability to say it, to not look at this as a content play.
Yeah.
I am throwing it down right now, Evan Novi Williams. I will guarantee you that there will be a content component to this, whether it's a reality show or whether it's a miniseries or whatever it is. I can guarantee you that will happen.
I believe you. And that makes total sense, obviously. So I think we're going to see a lot of those things. I think the part of the question that I have, and we talked about this at a Sportico event in New York in December, with Roger Bennett of Men in Blazers, and one of the guys over at Maximum Effort, shout out to Ricky, was that this model worked at Wrexham 100%. How transportable is it to other countries, other cultures? how specific is it to Robin Ryan, or is it the kind of thing that can work in a different city with different owners?
I believe the hypothetical I threw to Ricky was, what if Drake and Taylor Swift bought a team in, you know, whatever, fifth division? And he said, it's not as easy as you think. Like,
agreed.
Rob and Ryan are truly invested in the community, which is why this works. That's the secret. Not only the ability to turn anything into gold content, get it, but there is a, like, the people wouldn't support it if it was just sort of trying to take dollars, you know, extracted out of the club. That there's a real belief in the community and the club as a part of the community, and that's why this works.
I believe wholeheartedly that in 5 years, more people in the world will know Club Necaxa.
Yeah,
because that these deals happened, then know right now. It's the other stuff that I don't know. And just to give a sense of valuation here, Club Necaxa was valued in the low nine figures when Alan Sam bought in a number of years ago. Most recently, raised money, brought investors on at $250 million or so. So that's a mid to upper of the Liga MX tier. They are $250 million valuation. By contrast, Scott, every MLS club would trade for significantly more than $250 million at this point. Just to give a sense of the scale, and there's so many structural differences as we've gotten into. But Liga MX, the most watched soccer league in the U.S. by a long shot, and nowhere near the most valuable franchises.
I want to go to a game now. I want to, you know, you want to go down to Aguas
Calientes? I would love to.
Like I said, northwest of Mexico City, just south of, I got rid of it now. I forgot. Do you remember what it was? Wait, there it is. Zacatecas. So hold on. You're Aguas Calientes. I have to look at my scale here. It's hard, but just keep going. It's southwest of Monterrey, if that helps.
And then let's talk Wrexham for a second, because they just secured their second straight promotion, going up to now going to play next season in the third division of UK soccer. Obviously a lot of success on the field and off it. Expenses going up in concert with revenue. At some point soon, if they can get out of the third division into the second or up into the first before they get to the Premier League, cost is going to start to become an issue here, right? These are Rob and Ryan paid $0 for Wrexham. It was a fifth division team at the time. They committed to spending $2.5 million to invest in the club as they took over stewardship. I am fascinated to see if this team continues its trajectory, how these guys plan to fund the ultimate goal, right? Which the ultimate goal is obviously to reach the Premier League. Certainly seems like it is possible at some point in the medium term future, but these two guys don't have the money to fund a Premier League team, right?
If I look atop the table right now, I've got Stan Kroenke, multi billionaire,
yeah,
and I've got Abu Dhabi. Right, that's where I am at the top of the table right now.
Petro states and billionaires many times over, or in Chelsea's case, huge private equity fund.
Yeah.
So at some point, victims of their own success is not the right term, but at some point, there's going to have to be outside money and big outside money into Wrexham if this team wants to deliver on the stated goal of its ownership, which is to have it play in the biggest and largest and richest tier in UK soccer.
All right. I would be remiss, since you mentioned Chelsea, and I didn't know that was coming, but it is a way for me to at least promote the event we have coming up in Los Angeles, Invest in Sports LA. We are calling it Invest West, since we've done a whole bunch of them in New York, already tremendously successful. May 8th, LA, the One Hotel in West Hollywood. Come on and join us. You can find it, you know, go to events at sportico.com. You can join us there. I will be talking to Todd Boehly, one of the owners of Chelsea. Of course, his partners are the Clear Lake Capital. But who else we got there? We have Julie Ehrman is coming.
Alexis
Ohanian is coming.
Mark Lazary
is coming. Kevin Demoff from the Rams. And speaking of Kroenke, you know, he oversees the whole Arsenal thing now as well. Nuggets, they're doing pretty well. Maybe he was the most decorated sports executive now with one promotion. I don't want to leave anybody out, but I know I am, and it's only because I'm like,
there's a lot of others. But
Michelle
it's going to be a good
Magic
event.
Johnson
for sure.
Enterprises is coming. Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a good time. Anyway, everybody will be dressed nicely. We can't say the same for Major League Baseball players. That wasn't the worst segue.
No, not the worst.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst segue, you know, coming out of like cold stove nothing. But you were surprised, not surprised, that the MLBPA put out a statement pretty much putting Nike right in the crosshairs and saying, I mean, this, and by the way, the timing was weird to me because this has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, we're going to take care of this and it's Nike's fault. Nike did this. Everything is fine at Fanatics. They did their due diligence without disclosing, by the way, the relationship, but I'll let you do that. But Nike, 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 that's the people who screwed this up and you should know it. Not every day we see the finger pointed as squarely as it was.
Everything about this MLB uniform rollout product fallout disaster has been surprising to me. For folks who don't know or need a little refresher, Nike has spent the last 6 years designing a new type of Major League Baseball uniform, rolled it out this year, was roundly panned both by players and by fans who felt that the material was worse, the stitching, the lettering was too small, the pants didn't fit right. And for months, this all started in spring training in early February. For months, Nike has essentially, there's been a lot of silence. There hasn't been a lot of speaking publicly about what was going on, despite the fact that fans and players continue to criticize the uniforms. And now, as you said, this week on Sunday, the Major League Baseball Players Association, so the Players Union, sent a note to players informing them that the uniforms were going to be changed. So they were going to go back to the larger lettering, some changes to the coloring and the materials, the pants are going to fit differently. But in doing it, they ripped Nike. And I'll read a couple quotes here. This has been entirely a Nike issue, the memo said. At its core, what has happened here is that Nike was innovating something that didn't need to be innovated. It also criticized Nike for its response to the backlash, which it characterized as essentially telling the MLBPA, there's nothing to see here. Players will need to adjust. This is rare. Players unions don't go after league corporate partners particularly often, certainly not this vocally, and certainly not Nike. Nike is synonymous with sports and sports marketing. It is a huge kind of multi $100 billion plus market cap.
Not like it's Brooks.
Totally. Yeah. This is the most important company in sports apparel. So a number of things surprised me. Just to go into the weeds just slightly more, the thing that really surprised me, the criticizing the product, I understand. It seems very clear that this product was not
that was easy.
Baseball part, players or fans wanted.
Yeah.
The parts of the memo that criticize Nike's inability to work with and take feedback from players, Nike's inability to respond when players were upset, those to me strike at the core of what Nike has been so good at for decades, right? Nike didn't make just superior product. Nike marketed its product better, convinced fans and consumers it wanted them better. And it was a athlete friendly for a very long time. In a lot of ways was an athlete friendly company.
The association was about excellence on exactly. And off the field.
And we can get into the Fanatics relationship in a second as well. But this is Major League Baseball Players Association very, very publicly. I get this was a private memo that leaked and I got my hands on it on Sunday as well. But this is a very public and very forcefully worded rebuke of one of the most important companies in sports. And that is eye-opening to me.
Very happy that you brought in the term rebuke. I was hoping one of us would utter the term rebuke and you did it. I'm a big fan of it, especially when it's I and me and properly done. And then rebuke really sits perfectly in there. You mentioned the relationship with Fanatics. I'm unfamiliar with what you're talking. It's almost as if you're setting the stage as if like Fanatics, when it does deals, it sometimes gives equity to the counterparty. And it's almost as if you're insinuating that the Major League Baseball Players Association might have been one of those counterparties in a deal where they got equity, an equity stakeholder in Fanatics. And they're like, you know, so in essence, they own a piece of the company and didn't disclose that to anybody. Not that, I mean, we knew it, but really didn't tell the world, hey, it wasn't our, you know, the company we own a piece of. It was that other bad guy with the swoosh. It's almost like you're saying something like that.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Fanatics is a partner in all of this. So Fanatics makes the uniforms that Nike designs, the ones worn by players. And a lot of fans, because it is trendy and for other reasons, I think, put Fanatics in the crosshairs in the past few months about how much and whether Fanatics was largely responsible for the jersey fiasco. The Major League Baseball Players Association memo entirely in the union's eyes absolves Fanatics, makes it clear that Fanatics was doing just what Nike said. Here, I'll read another quote. Fanatics has been and continues to be a great player partner with the players and has been making the uniforms for the last years without issue. The subtext here, Scott, is exactly what you said. Fanatics has a big corporate relationship with the Major League Baseball Players Association, not in the same way that it does with Nike, right? So there's a tighter relationship there. MLBPA also an equity holder in Fanatics. So there's a number of tie-ups in here that at least make Fanatics a more important partner to keep close for the Major League Baseball Players Association than the league. There's obviously a lot of truth to what they're saying as well. The Fanatics makes what Nike asked them to. These uniforms have been made in the same majestic facility in Pennsylvania for more than a decade. The uniforms.
Hold on. I want to be clear. Majestic, yep, being used there is a noun, not an adjective.
Yeah, uppercase M. It's. I'm it's sure it's like a nice place.
Golden, yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it's a very nice facility. But yeah, and it's been a and we've talked about it on the show, Scott. It's been a rough few months for Fanatics.
Fanatics got beat up on this one, right?
They got beat up on this one. Michael Rubin, the CEO and chairman, acknowledged as much a few months ago, saying on stage, I think it was at the Sloan conference, about how his company was in the crosshairs. Is this going to change people's minds? I don't think so. In some ways, I think just because of its scale and because of everything that it does and all the other fan-facing products, I think Fanatics is anything that has to do with uniforms and licensed apparel.
There's a predisposition to blaming Fanatics. Yeah. If somebody gets a shirt that isn't quite right or whatever, there's a predisposition to saying Fanatics screwed it up.
But I would imagine that within Fanatics walls, specifically on this MLB issue, there's a lot of people who feel like the truth was finally said semi-publicly by MLBPA.
Or, you know, our shared pal at Fanatics years ago got me a Maple Leafs jersey because, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm guaranteeing it's true, that the Maple Leafs had a fourth line kid on the team, Nikita Soshnikov.
Yeah.
Who, of course, was like my parents or grandparents were from Odessa. The name there was Soshnikov. And I guarantee you somewhere down the line that we were related. So I brought my focus group of one to the Devils Maple Leafs game years ago. And I believe Nikita at the time, like I said, he's a fourth line player. I think he had one goal, you know, whatever games, and just not a goal scorer at all. Ripped one from the blue line, scored a goal. I think he finished with two. I have to go and check.
Amazing.
But we were sitting nearby and we got, you know, we caught his eye and my son gave him the thumbs up and, you know, whatever. I told him that's his cousin. Much like I faked the signatures, I told him that's his cousin without the qualifier. At this age, I think he probably knows. I can further qualify. But he was very happy. And by the way, the product was just fine. So that was my biggie right there.
The if you're curious, Nikita Soshnikov now plays for Traktor Chelyabinsk in the KHL.
I'm assuming that's not in the AHL.
That is in the KHL. They play in Chelyabinsk, Russia.
All right, I got to get a Chelyabinsk. Hey, friend at Fanatics, if you're listening to the show, Chelyabinsk Soshnikov shirt. We don't need a jersey. Give me some stats. What do you got?
Sharpie and sign it pretending to be Nikita Soshnikov.
I've been
signing
Soshnik my whole life. I can do Soshnikov, no problem. While I intro the next topic, why don't you get me some stats on Nikita? I'm hoping he has more than five goals. But, you know, I'm hoping it becomes someday as big as the Super Bowl, and that when Nikita Soshnikov wins a scoring title, we will have a day off. I'm trying to marry the two things I'm trying to bring up here. Roger Goodell opened some eyes. The NFL commissioner uttered the words, moving the Super Bowl, or his wish to move the Super Bowl to President's Day, which is, of course, a three-day weekend, which all of America would certainly celebrate because nobody likes getting up after watching the Super Bowl for work the next day. You and I always ask, why don't they just play on Saturday? Another good question, because it's the marquee event. I don't want to hear about better nights for a game. It really doesn't matter. But Roger understands, although you see what else he dropped in there, though, as part of the grand plan so they can get the extra week and play on a three-day weekend. Roger wants an 18th game. So we went from 16 to 17, drop a couple of preseasons, add another one. Boy, if I'm an NFL player, do I want another game on the schedule? I do not know. Like, just watching these guys after one game, like the knees, the back, everything hurting, and now to add another one, I'm not so sure, but that was all part of the plan, which would get us to a three-day weekend Super Bowl.
Yeah, this is all the in the idea that the NFL is a TV property, and it is gradually extending its tentacles to hit as much of the calendar as possible.
It is
More Christmas Thursday Day. Night games, Christmas Day games, playing in other places internationally. Mm-hmm. No surprise here that Roger Goodell wants the 18th regular season game. It's worth way more than even two preseason games. Way worse for players, obviously, and Lloyd Howell and the NFLPA is going to have a lot to say about this idea. I will say two things that jumped out to me. One, I have no idea how intentional this all was. It was a conversation that Roger was having with Pat McAfee. It feels almost politician-like to marry this fan-friendly idea, which you know fans are going to love, which is moving the Super Bowl to a day when you have the following day off, right? And to hook the 18th game kind of into that. Right. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that says the NFL couldn't move the schedule around to get to President's Day weekend without the 18th game. But there's something very clever to me and intentional, and maybe I'm totally off on this, but very politician-like about packaging this idea of, do you want the day after Super Bowl off? Well, you should just get behind this idea of an 18th game. I find that to be really interesting. The second thing, Scott, is that oftentimes, we've seen this recently, a lot of sports leagues, and the NFL did this as well, will expand its offering right before media deals get signed while they're in negotiation because it makes their property more valuable. The NFL just recently redid 11-year deals.
TV networks love labor peace.
Exactly. But there's an opt-out after 7 years.
Yep.
And if the NFL is serious and is able to tweak its schedule to add another regular season game to its package, that to me is another indication that at 2029, that 7-year opt-out, the NFL may be targeting that again, because we see this in the NBA right now. They added the in-season tournament. They added the extra games getting into the playoffs a couple of years ago. They clearly built up this new inventory just right now so that they could sign these new TV deals. The fact that the NFL is talking about it after signing those big TV deals, to me, is a further indication that we may see these deals end not after the 11 years, but after the 7 years in 2029.
I can't wait till the in-season tournament is what we're going to share it on Amazon Prime and Peacock. That'll be that. And then we'll have an exclusive window for something about this game. And by the way, you said it's almost like politician-like.
Yeah.
Like I'm assuming, again, you know, I'm older and some have pointed out sometimes you know things and don't know things. You do know who Roger Goodell's father was.
Oh, I do. I know that he was a senator. Yeah.
Okay. Senator Charles Goodell. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were okay, on the same Scott, page
before,
there. We know.
Before we wrap, I'm going to give you some Nikita Soshnikov trivia.
Wrapping. Hold on. We were going to transition from the Super Bowl and health and fitness of players to like they'd rather play on grass. If you have if you wanted to absolutely throw out what we discussed in our 1 minute of prep time, go. By all means, go ahead.
This is an interesting investment. Let's talk about this, and then I'll give you some Nikita Soshnikov trivia.
Thank you. Let's end it with trivia. You know that there has been some talk. You mentioned the NBA or the NFL Players Association. A lot of the players saying they don't want to play on turf anymore. There have been studies, both sides, saying the NFL says it's the same. But long story short, our friend George Pine over at Bruin Capital has made an investment in a company called Playgreen BF, a Dutch company. Now, their subsidiaries we need to know about, Stadium Grow Lighting and Alva Technology. They already work with the Red Sox, the Cowboys, and Tottenham. In essence, it is sort of like grass on steroids. It's how do you marry technology and different types of grass for different types of conditions, et cetera. And reading tea leaves, to me, hearing all these things that the players want, and that this is a very easy way, even if it costs a few bucks, for NFL owners to look at the players and say, see, we hear you, we care, we hear you, see you, all that stuff. We're all going to move to grass surfaces because we know that's what you guys want, even though our research doesn't say it's any better in the health and safety department. But if you really think it's important, we're going to switch to grass. And now if I'm George Pine, I'm reading tea leaves and going, if we're moving in that direction anyway, I'm going to get in on this company right now when like the valuation, I was like $100 million or something. I'm going to get in now because this is going to be a winner.
This is the perfect companion topic to the one we just had, right? Yeah. About the 18th game regular season and whether or not players are going to be on board for that. Another one of the biggest topics next time the NFLPA and the league start talking about collective bargaining and they can open up their deal whenever, I believe, is the surfaces. Players are increasingly getting vocal about the turf fields that the league uses. Players believe it leads to injuries. The league feels very strongly that it has a lot of evidence that says the opposite. Financially, for owners, turf fields way more economical. It doesn't cost nearly as much as grass. It allows you to put three straight concerts
and everything else
the week, and then take the stage off the field, and suddenly the field is ready again. There's obviously no growing associated with turf or anything like that, or with turf.
You got it right.
there's a whole bunch of interesting reasons here. But as we start thinking about the levers that might get pulled in certain negotiations. Players want grass. NFL wants 18 game season.
What's it going to cost me to put grass in? And let's say I do a combined. Those who have grass already, great. But we're still going to go a combined investment. We're all going to kick in a few bucks, and every stadium will be converted to grass because that's what the play. If it gets me an 18th game, I'm all in.
And it's a bigger fight or not a bigger fight, but players have bigger preferences in soccer, international soccer.
Yeah.
And we've seen NFL teams buy for $1 million, $2 million grass fields to lay on top of their turf for single one-off exhibition soccer games, right? Leo Messi got a lot of this treatment as well.
Yep.
And I know there are NFL players who looked at that and said, "What? My team won't put grass in for me, but this one soccer player comes for one game, and suddenly we're spending $1 million to bring it in." So the turf wars, for lack of a better term, in the NFL in the next year or beyond is actually going to be really fascinating. And this is maybe a smart investment for Bruin to get ahead of if there is a wider push to get grass into big NFL stadiums, to have a big position in one of the leaders in that world, seems like good tea leaf reading to me.
Play Green BF. So the NFL has already dealt with Microsoft for surface computing, right? Now we're going literal surfaces, which, I mean, should we tell the world, by the way, in the way that the sports business editorial work, Sportico has an idea, whatever, then we start talking about it or whatever, and then everybody else catches up or, you know, front runs. So let's tell them anyway. What do you think we're going to do coming into NFL season as a preview? One of the topics we think we want to get a good look at.
Wow, we're doing this here, Scott, huh?
Well, should we? Because, you know, we know we're going to read it elsewhere. So what do you think? Should we do it here or should we wait?
Let's wait. Let's give them, let's discuss it.
Because you know they're going to steal it.
People steal our ideas.
And when
all
I
the
say
time.
They, I just mean they. There's no particular they. They.
Yeah.
I saw some. I did something on LinkedIn the other day with a lot of people. Like, they reached out privately to say, "Wait, way to go! Did you see this one?" I won't mention who. I'm not looking to embarrass.
Your LinkedIn is not a place.
That's not your daily reading. Yeah. All right. Well, let's just say another outlet put the world's most valuable sports teams.
Yeah.
Oh, you did see. So it was the other outlet right on top, which clearly made it look as if it was their rankings of the world's, you know, in the bottom corner, I would say in a font that was 1/20th the size of the outlet on top was Via Sportico, which you really did. I know I'm of an advanced age, but you needed a magnifying glass to see. Even healthy eyes like yours would need a magnifying glass. And I said, hey, shouldn't the Sportico logo be just as big as the name on the top of the graphic? Since, you know, it's Sportico's work, it's Sportico's data. Like, I don't want to accuse anybody of intentional obfuscation. I don't. And the fact that I could say obfuscation and Aguascalientes in the same show is very, very satisfying to me. But, I mean, it sure seems that way. It sure seems like you're trying to fool people into thinking this is your work. That ain't cool. It's that simple. Well, we do our best, and sometimes we make mistakes if a credit doesn't get, but if it's pointed out, man, we correct it right away. We do our best. There are other people in this industry who do really, really good work, and we credit them when they do. That is a staple of what we do. We have no problem saying this comes from another outlet, another publication, when it's good work. We do it all the time. It would just be nice if everybody would behave in the same manner.
Preach.
Now give me Nikita Soshnikov. What do we got?
From that serious thing to a very wholly unserious thing. Okay, Nikita Soshnikov has played for 3 NHL teams.
He
has? Can you name them?
Yep. No, I know the Leafs. That's all I know.
Made his debut with the Leafs in the 2015-16 season.
Yeah. We were there for that one.
Yep. And then...
How many goals?
2? In that season?
Yeah.
2.
Yeah, I saw one of them. That's the there one. Okay, great.
Next year, played for the Leafs again. 5 goals in 56 games.
5 goals? What?
3 more games for the Leafs year. The next year, and then played for the Blues. The Blues.
Did not know that.
And then your hometown, New York Islanders. 3 games 2 years ago.
I did know he was on the Islanders. Yes, I did know that.
So he's played 90 games in the NHL. How many goals, assists do you think he has? And give me the plus minus.
90 games. He had 1 goal for every 10. So he finished with 8 goals.
Okay.
I'll say, assists. I will say another, if he had 8 goals, he had 9, 17 total, 8 goals, 7 assists, plus minus 90 games. He's a fourth liner. Their job is to not give up goals. Longer than this should be, but I'll say he was a plus 7.
Okay. 8 goals, dead on. 8 goals. He had 8 assists, not 7.
Okay,
his plus minus was minus 8. So
he was minus 8 on the fourth line?
Yeah.
Ooh,
it was
bueno.
Struggled a bit. He did have this may have been the game you're at. His rookie season, he had a power play goal, which is surprising for all these other stats seem to imply a serious fourth liner. He had a power play goal.
Did he go out on the wrong time?
that's possible. He accidentally jumped over the boards.
Nikita, go stand in front of the net. He's not a big dude, though. He wasn't a very big dude.
No, he's not. I'll give you the stats real quick.
He's not a very big dude, so that doesn't make sense.
He doesn't actually have his height and weight. He plays for Tractor. Oh, here it is. He's 174 pounds, 5'11".
That's
for Tractor. He's 30 years old. Tractor was the 6th seed in the East, made it all the way to the KHL semifinals, where they got swept by Lokomotive, which then got swept by Magnitogorsk.
You couldn't come up with something better when you could Lokomotive swept? Like, come on, that was obvious. That was an easy one.
Got run off the tracks.
They got run off the tracks by Lokomotive. Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
There you go. Nikita. Let's get Nikita on the podcast at some point. Your long lost cousin.
Yeah, Bunny Mayu. Okay.
Last question. Who plays more NHL games, Jackson Soshnik or Nikita Soshnikov?
Oh, Nikita Soshnikov. I'm sorry. I'm a realist. I'm sorry. I'm not one of the crazy dads. Are you kidding me? The over-under could have been 1, and I'm taking Nikita Soshnikov.
Well, Nikita, if you're listening and you'd like to reconnect with Scott, you can find him on Twitter at Soshnik.
We skipped the USA hockey district tryouts this week. Jack Jackson, as you know, was recovering from the pneumonia. And I wasn't Could I have put him on the ice? Yes. Would I have been one of those crazy sports parents that was like, well, I know you're coughing and I know you're whatever. No, not happening. I sent a note in saying, sorry, but for your planning purposes, my kid can't make it. He's got pneumonia.
Good for you, Scott.
Thank you.
If you would like to commend Scott at Sasha
on
Twitter, you can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.